Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
What's going on, people? Welcome to Pain Points, proudly brought to you by the SB Nation Podcast Network. As usual, we're a part of the Tainer Supers family. I'm Jake Painting. You can find my written work over at tainersupers.com. You can find all the great writing over at tainersupers.com. I'm on Twitter at Jake Painting, JakePayNting. Today, I'm joined by Tainer Supers Editor-in-Chief, Kyle Tighe. What's going on, man?
How's it going, dude?
Yeah, not too bad. Same old stuff. So we're just going to get into some... Well, we'll go through the news, I guess, that's come through in the Timberwolves world to start off with, and then we'll just get into a few questions that I thought up about the 2020-2021 season, try and, figure out a few things that might pertain to the Wolves roster, and just, yeah, try and have some fun with it. So, obviously, the big news is Glenn Taylor looking to sell the team. Not the first time he's done so, but it seems like from all reports that he is looking pretty seriously into it and that things are moving along quite quickly. What are your thoughts overall on that, Kyle?
Obviously, like you said, the news came out that he was trying to sell. Wasn't the first time, but at least the reporting on this seems like it's also for real this time. I mean, yeah. Everything that goes into this, I think, what is it? Is Glenn Taylor 79? I mean, he's older. He's put more emphasis and investment into the team lately. I mean, they remodeled Target Center. They have a practice facility. He's kind of been a little more open with his checkbook in terms of roster. And I mean, you know, when Gerson came in, he allowed Gerson to go get all of his guys. So it kind of makes sense. I mean, he built it up. I think Forbes had him at $1.37 billion. So I don't know, it just seems kind of like a good time. And, you know, with this whole pandemic thing and the economy over here and nationwide or, you know, globally, it might just be kind of a comfy time to sell. I don't think the NBA franchises are in the tank in terms of value, but I just, you know, if I'm 80 and I just want to get a really good, return on my, what was it? $80 million, $90 million investment back in the 90s. It makes sense. So it comes down to, you know, who's going to get it? I know, you know, Kevin Garnett was obviously the guy that everyone wanted to get it. But, you know, over in the States, I mean, and you know this too because you're so connected, but when a player's face is on an ownership group, those guys probably put in $10 million of the $1.3 billion. So, I mean, it was since this news broke and between now and the recording, like Aaron Aflalo is on a group that is really interested, which was like the weirdest thing in the world. Because if you look at how much Aflalo has made in his career, it's not a ton of money. But I guess, you know, my overall stance was, and I tweeted this out, but, you know, I think it's time to move on. I know, I think you and I are big fans of Dane Moore, and he had Britt Robson on this week, and he said, you know, I think Dane's main takeaway was Glenn Taylor owning the Timberwolves means the Timberwolves are staying in Minnesota 100%. Anyone who comes in, even if it's Kevin Garnett, it might still be 99%, but there's still that small percent chance that the team could leave. And that could happen, but I'm always optimistic. You know that better than anyone. I just believe that they'll stay around. And while Glenn was a good owner, he was a great owner for the Minnesota Lynx. He kind of let Cheryl Reeve and her crew do their thing. It can't get any worse. I mean, Glenn's a good guy. I really think he's a good guy at heart. But I mean, the team has sucked for as long as you and I have been alive. So, I mean, I don't think the next owner can take it anywhere but up. So I'm optimistic. I'm excited for change. I think they need to shake everything up in that kind of team a little bit, in that franchise. So what about you? Like, I'm really interested because obviously you're a big Wolves fan, but you're on the other side of the world. It's like, what was your take on it?
Yeah, I guess I'm kind of in the same boat as you. I think it's obviously, it's very commendable to Glenn, the way he's kept the franchise in Minnesota and the commitment he's shown to keeping the team in Minnesota. I mean, that's even, you know, on the other side of the world, that's still all we want as Timberwolves fans, is to keep the team in the city, and we don't want to be Seattle supporters. We don't want to be Las Vegas supporters. I mean, and obviously outside of that, you know, I think his ambition with the Timberwolves, not so much the Lynx, but to keep the team in the city has overruled his, I guess, ambition to turn them into a real perennial winner. I mean, there's been the country club hirings have always, you know, marred his reputation a little bit. Then when he goes outside the country club, you know, the Tibbs stuff, who we'll get to, I'm sure, in a minute, is a disaster. You know what I mean? And it's, you know, the handshake agreement with Andrew Wiggins, all that's only stuff, you know, in the last 5 years. And like, you can go back a lot further than that, and kind of, you know, we can sit here all day talking about the things that Glenn Taylor's done wrong as an owner. But like you said, we want the team to stay in Minnesota. I hope that he doesn't kind of, you know, go in with naivety about, you know, the whoever's succeeding him to keep the team in Minnesota, because that's the kind of thing, I guess, that we saw with that Andrew Wiggins deal, that he does put a lot of faith into, you know, like handshake agreements, I guess, that can't really be put on the dotted line until it's too late. With Wiggins, obviously, you can never, you know, put into his contract that he's going to try harder. I don't think legally they can really keep the team in Minnesota once, you know, someone else takes over as majority owner. I'm not sure. Maybe they'll try and, you know, wean him out of the franchise. Maybe he stays on for another few years, and they, you know, the new buyer kind of gradually increases their percentage, their stake in the franchise. But yeah, I don't know. I have mixed feelings about it. Like you said, I think a shakeup is clearly in order. It has been for years, and it can't really be a bad thing when this team is, you know, the bottom end of attendance, the bottom end of, you know, fan sales, and just overall excitement in the league, even with two fairly marketable, you know, young stars. It probably can't be a bad thing that they, yeah, shake things up and get a fresh face in to lead the franchise.
And again, I'm like a stickler for consistency. So like, the day before the news breaks, I think if you just polled anyone, they hated Glenn Taylor. You know what I mean? Like, I think,
yeah,
Glenn Taylor, you can be a good person and just not be good at stuff. I mean, Glenn Taylor obviously has made billions of dollars, and he has, you know, if you Google him, he's had some kind of weird lawsuits or business practices. But like any successful person does, they have some blemishes and some things in their past. But the day before the news came, I mean, everyone, you know, would have been like, oh, I can't wait till Glenn sells. We can get KG. We can retire his jersey. We can have some shakeup. And then when the news finally does come that he might be selling, I was surprised at how many people were all of a sudden like, oh, man, well, are we sure we want Glenn to sell? And I was just like, wait a second, you didn't like Glenn Taylor yesterday, so now you want him to stay on?
For years, it's been, you know, everything you see is that this team will go nowhere until Glenn Taylor sells the team. And now, like you said, it's kind of everyone, now that the reality is hit, they're almost like, wait a second, this could have some repercussions that maybe we don't like. But that was the reality all along.
Yeah, and like I said, I think, kind of reminds me of having Andrew Wiggins on the roster. Like, is there some risk with this move and getting rid of Glenn and bringing someone new in? Yeah, but could it be a much better reward? I mean, they have a smart front office. I think you and I both are obviously team Gerson Rosas, but like, I've never thought they've had a smart owner. I mean, I think Glenn's a good guy, and he's, you know, a family guy, and he loves handshakes, like you said, and he loves lasagna dinners. But like, having a Steve Ballmer might be a benefit. Or like, this is kind of pivot to American football, but like, the Carolina Panthers got a new owner, and like, he did a bunch of changes and modernized the front office and analytics and stuff. And like, that can't hurt the Timberwolves. I mean, they've been trying those over the last couple of years. I just can't see how it'd be a bad thing. I mean, obviously, Dane and Britt talked about this too, but anytime you change owners, I mean, Ryan and Gerson are both have less job security. I mean, I think prior to the news,
much less.
We thought Gerson Rosas was pretty much here for as long as he wanted to stay. And it'll be interesting if a new owner comes in and he doesn't give Gersan the same leash that he's had in the past. I mean, the last time Gersan took a job like this and he didn't get the power he wanted, he bailed. I don't think that's the case here. Again, I could just be drunk off the Kool-Aid, but I'm just optimistic. I think change is good. I think it's necessary. I think the Wolves are in a better spot as a asset than, and the Lynx than they ever were. And I think if you can get someone in there that wants to keep the team in the city and wants to give Gersan his leash and Cheryl Reeve her leash and just let them do their thing. I mean, the Lynx have shown they know how to build winners. That will be important. So I think it's good news, but and I think it's gonna happen fast. I mean, I don't think Glenn Taylor will be sitting in his chair courtside come Christmas when the team tips off. I really think this has smoke and fire. But we'll see. It'll be interesting to follow. It was good for you and I. We have something to talk about that's not like Liat or, you know, LaMelo Ball month 7. So
yeah, I think that the thing with Rosas as well, I guess, with, you know, obviously I agree that his job security is just, well, I guess will drop dramatically even when this does happen. But the thing I think that's different than his time in Dallas, where he, like you said, he bailed early. I think it was 90 days that he kind of stuck around for. He didn't get the power he wanted from Mark Cuban. I think Cuban kind of tried to steer him in a direction. And as we've seen, Rosas has a very clear picture of what he wants to do and how he wants to win basketball games. But the difference, I think, here, I guess, with the new owners is that Rosas has already had that full season and the trade deadline. He's already, I guess, you know, if you compare this team and the direction they're going to how they were 12 months ago, you can see that he is, you know, implementing the right processes. He's made that, you know, I'm not a massive D'Angelo Russell fan, but I think he's a clear upgrade over Wiggins. I think that was still a really good trade, no matter what happens with that draft pick next season. And I think that's working in his favor with the new owners. I think they're probably less likely to just oust him as soon as they get in, because he does have that track record of being a pretty good president of basketball operations so far in his time with Minnesota. And I guess that at least buys him, you know, another trade deadline or another, you know, another season after they arrive to prove his worth. Maybe it doesn't buy him the same amount of time as it would with Glenn, just because I think Glenn obviously really likes Gersan and really, you know, trust him to do whatever he wanted, I guess. But I think he's bought himself at least another season and at least a little bit more time to prove his worth, rather than just a guy who's going to get shoved out the door as soon as the new ownership arrive.
Yeah, and like, it's a classic, like, American saying of fool me once, shame on me type thing. Like, it's okay that Gersan had that first time in Dallas that didn't really work, and maybe he, you know, you get into a job sometimes in life and the job description is not nearly what you're actually doing. So Gersan left.
And we don't know the ins and outs of that. Like, we know the surface, you know, reporting. We don't know what happened behind the scenes.
Right. But it just, you know, you're not going to do it again. Like, Gersan Rosas isn't going to all of a sudden develop this habit or this, you know, perception of whenever things don't go his way, he just quits.
I mean, he'll never get another job again.
He'll never get another job again. What owners are going to bring that guy in if he bailed on two highly respective owners? I mean, Glenn Taylor might not be big to us, but I mean, he was like, had a very important role in the NBA's Board of Governors. So, I mean, I'm not as worried about that. You know, the KG thing, again, it's pretty cool. It'd be cool if Kevin Garnett was like the brand ambassador. And I mean, I can't imagine that would be a bad thing. Get his jersey retired. Have him sit in on free agent meetings. Like, make him... The Timberwolves are cool to you and I, but they're not cool to free agents or your general fan. So having him and his personality, I think, is a benefit. There are some scary things when you Google about, in the past, of him saying, when I take over a team, I want to get my guys in there. I mean, I don't, you know, if Tony Allen is the GM of the Timberwolves next summer, I think we're in trouble. But I'm optimistic. I think it's time. I think it's necessary. And I think whoever inherits the team or buys the team is getting a much better, like I said, asset or product with both the Wolves and Lynx than they would have, you know, 5 years ago. So it'll be interesting. But like I said, much needed news for you and I. I was when it broke, I knew you were like sleeping. I was like, I can't wait for Jake to wake up. It's gonna be awesome.
Yeah, it's one of those things that it reminded me a little bit of when Tibbs got fired, when we kind of, for so long, we were like, you know, Tibbs needs to be fired. Like, Glenn Taylor needs to sell the team. And then all of a sudden it just happened and you're like, oh, I never actually expected this to happen. Like, there was that game, you know, I think after LA, Tibbs, and they just won Minnesota, and all of a sudden Tibbs got fired, and I was like, holy shit, like, you know, they've actually done it.
That's a great point. It would have been great if they would have, like, sold the team, or, like, Glenn, this news would have came out, like, after the OKC game with Chris Paul, or, like, after they blew that, like, historic lead to the Kings. Like, if Glenn would have just came out after the game and been like, screw this, I'm selling the team, it would have been like, okay, that's fine. But, like, yeah, it just came out of nowhere. And I don't know, I guess I was maybe naive. I just maybe thought Glenn was just going to kind of die owning the team. Like,
yeah,
you know? But yeah, like I said, I think it's good news. We'll obviously monitor it, and you and I will be on top of it. But I think we got to pivot, because you just brought it up. We're recording this Saturday night for me out on the West Coast, Sunday for you. The news today that Tibbs is officially running the Knicks. What do you think?
Yeah.
5 years.
I don't think I could imagine a worse scenario for New York. I mean, obviously, we're biased just because we've been scorned by Tom Thibodeau, but there's a lot of similarities to Minnesota, and then the highs aren't as high in New York, and the lows are even lower. I mean, are they going to trade? You know, is he going to come in and try and do the whole Timberwolves thing again? Is he going to try and trade RJ Barrett for a star that can help them win now that will, you know, like, destroy them later? I've seen a lot today that it was just kind of, you know, Tibbs was just a bad GM in Minnesota, and that he, you know, will be better now that he's just a coach in New York. But I think that's pretty, you know, being pretty ignorant to the fact that his schemes were very outdated. He had no, you know, player chemistry with the players that weren't guys who he coached, you know, 10 years ago. He never tried to build relationships with guys who he, you know, with the Carl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins, who I guess he didn't think were up to standard or up to playing the way they should have been playing. I don't think he tried to foster, you know, an environment where they could thrive. He kind of just threw them under the bus and said, look, we'll just, you know, get Jimmy Butler and he'll do what you don't do. And then, you know, everywhere I hear is that New York are absolutely, you know, enamored with LaMelo Ball. And that could be, you know, the worst pairing that I've ever seen. I don't think LaMelo Ball and Tom Thibodeau can coexist at all.
So I love that. I love what you just said. I have some takes. And I think my first take would be is that when this all came out, I mean, obviously, when it came out, the news broke. And welcome back to Adrian Wojnarowski, by the way, who's apparently free. Yeah. People were obviously got their jokes off, but then there was a really large segment of people that were like, well, you know, Tom Thibodeau is still like a good coach. And I struggled with that because I think you can, this is in any shape, realm of life, but like, I think you can know a lot about something, but not necessarily be good at it. Or like, okay, I think Tom Thibodeau has much more basketball IQ in a portion of his brain than you and I combined. But like, if you can't relate to players, I mean, the best coaches in the league right now aren't just the smartest basketball guys. They're also the ones that, like, can relate to the modern-day NBA star. Like, they can relate to millennials. They understand it. Like, so that, like you said, not only and your basketball mind is far superior to mine, but, like, the schemes and all that stuff is far outdated. But I just don't know how the dude, like, people, because, you know, they're doing it. Like, they're trying to relate what Tibbs is going to take over in New York to what he took over in Minnesota. And with all due respect, again, maybe I'm just drunk off blue Kool-Aid, but what he took over in Minnesota was light years better than what he's taken over in New York.
They, like, don't have a player in the same realm as Towns.
No, and I mean, like,
much less Zach LaVine.
Right, and I mean, like, I know what we think of Wiggins, and it's all fair, but, like, one-on-one, like, Andrew Wiggins is going to beat RJ Barrett right now. Like, yeah. I don't know what RJ Barrett is. I like RJ Barrett, but what is he taking over? And then, yeah, the LaMelo Ball thing, like, is Tom Thibodeau going to be coaching LaMelo Ball and RJ Barrett like 3 years from now? And again, I think the biggest thing that goes under the radar is that somehow, some way, how did Tom Thibodeau have the leverage to get a 5-year deal? Like, how is he not, after he just literally burned a franchise to the ground, how is he not on like a 2-year prove it deal? That dude has the best agent in the world. it'll be interesting. Like I said, And you again, you, I think you mentioned this, you know this, but like, if anyone can bring the Knicks and win a title, you're a legend. I mean, that is worth more
than that. And I think that would be the reasoning for Thibodeau, that he doesn't want to. If he comes back and he's a success story and they make the playoffs next year, and he, even in 5 years, they don't win a championship, but they're, you know, in the playoffs every season, they're going to love him there, and he'll get another job after that, and he'll be forever renowned as a really good coach. But just don't see it happening.
And if he doesn't, which I don't think he will, I mean, they're going to have to make some massive changes to that roster, because I think that roster is maybe one of the three worst rosters in the league. But I think he's gonna. I mean, it's a no brainer. Like, you get to coach in New York, and media restrictions might be even tighter post COVID. I mean, you might not have to do as many interviews or as many media things. And he gets 5 more years of a really good contract. But I think it's important too, because before this, you know, so Leon Rose takes over from CAA, the agency, and he takes over the Knicks. And since then, all summer, when there's nothing to talk about, every CAA guy has been linked to the Knicks. So away it was Karl-Anthony Towns. Then it was Devin Booker. And now it's Zach LaVine this week. I would say confidently that with the Tibbs to New York thing now done, we can put to rest Karl-Anthony Towns ever, quote-unquote, demanding a trade to the Knicks.
There's no chance.
I know he's from out in that area, in the New Jersey area. Karl-Anthony Towns does not like Tom Thibodeau. So we can just put that to rest. I don't think we have to worry about that. He will be in Minnesota. But yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, I really hope it's a dumpster fire. I feel bad for the Knicks fans, because they're good, passionate fans. But I mean, I don't see how that team wasn't like a weird up and coming young assistant coach that could coach young players. And then 2-3 years from now, when they're better, they could bring in a guy. But I do want to say this, because I think now, because he got that job, I think Kenny Atkinson will get the Bulls job, and that's going to crush my heart, because I think Kenny Atkinson's a really good coach. If things didn't work out with Ryan Saunders, I would love him to coach the Wolves, but I think the Bulls are going to just kind of have Kenny Atkinson fall in their laps, and they'll be good, and the Knicks will continue to be bad, but we'll get a lot of good jokes from it, man. Like, a lot of good content, so.
Yeah, he's just like a cockroach that survived like a nuclear blast, Tom Thibodeau. Like, he just, no matter what he does, he was just not going away. And like, they've been such a messy franchise, you know, for so many years in the front office and the coaching, you know, roulette that's going on there. But like, Thibodeau, he has not, you know, bonded with the front office in his whole career. That's part of the reason why he demanded, you know, that Minnesota hire him as both, you know, the hobo and the coach. I just don't see, you know, if they're trying to play the long game, if Leon Rose is trying to play the long game in New York's front office and really try and develop some of the good talent they have, that's never seemed to be the way that Tibbs operates. And we heard all the same stories before he got to Minnesota, you know, that he was changed, that he'd be going around the league and learning these new schemes and, you know, learning to coach the modern game. And then he got to Minnesota and they ran the ice scheme every single play. You know, you heard him screaming it from 3 blocks away. They didn't shoot threes. They, you know, wouldn't put Towns on the perimeter for an entire game. Like, we've seen, just, I'm not a, you know, most people, and I'm not a huge Ryan Saunders, you know, booster, but we've seen how easy it was for Saunders to just maximize Towns immediately, and that is let him shoot more threes. Like, Tibbs is the kind of guy who just, in, you know, most of his stops is outside the 4 or 5 players, your Butlers and Taj Gibsons. He's never, you know, maximized individual talent, and that's exactly what New York need, is someone who can really maximize their talent, get the most out of Barrett, get the most out of Mitch Robinson. I don't get it. I hope for the, you know, the friends I have who go for New York and for all the suffering they've gone through, that it works out, but I wouldn't put my money on it.
I would have bet my life when he got laid off by the Timberwolves that he would have never gotten another head coaching job. I mean, I never would have seen this coming. But yeah, like I said, I wish him well. It was a no-brainer for him, because he gets 5 more years of guaranteed money. It's hard not to there's such a better chance of us looking back at this as just another Phil Jackson move, where just a, you know, a storied guy with a resume just cashed in and took the money from New York, rather than, oh my God, can you believe in 2024 the Knicks are perennial contenders? Like, they just don't have a roster, and any of the Tibbs guys that everyone likes to talk about, when he took over the Wolves, Jimmy Butler was just like entering his prime, or, you know, right in his prime, and Taj Gibson still had life, and Derrick Rose was out there, but like all those guys from the Tibbs era kind of gone. I mean, he gets to coach Taj again, which I'm sure will be great for the younger guys.
But there's no way that Jimmy's going back
never.
There.
No, like, Jimmy loves Miami,
and I think his relationship with Tibbs soured. I don't think they're on bad terms, but I think they definitely soured. I don't think he enjoyed being coached by Tibbs the second time around.
That's all you would need to know if you're the Knicks front office. Like, well, we shouldn't probably hire this guy.
Yeah, when you know, the guy who's been in his corner for his whole career eventually soured on him, and, you know, through a public hissy fit, you know, that this probably isn't a good idea.
I agree. Like I said, best of luck to him. It made sense. He cashed in again. And it's good for us. Like I said, I think it's good for the league, just because the more storylines and stuff you have and drama, I mean, there's going to be drama. Like, he's going to, if the basketball season does come back starting on Christmas or whenever, by mid-January or something, if RJ Barrett's played 3 straight nights of 46 minutes a game, I feel bad for RJ, but that'll be great for us. Like, we'll be able to get our jokes off. So.
Yeah, so we'll get straight into these other questions. I mean, that was obviously all the news we've had Timberwolves-related for about 3 months. So we'll get into a few questions just relative to next season. I think it's obviously a long way away, but watching this bubble ball has got me pretty excited to actually see the Timberwolves again. So my first one is, assuming Towns is in, I guess, let's say the 10th percentile league-wide defensively. I know that's kind of a random number, the 10th percentile, but I think he's around that area. How good does he have to get to be, you know, for this team to be a playoff, you know, lock or a contender? I guess the same goes for D'Angelo Russell as well. They're both probably in the same boat.
That's a really good question. First off, I just want to ask you this, because I, like I said, you're my guy on this. Do you just feel like because the Timberwolves played so long ago and then Towns was injured for all that time, it's almost like he kind of has been on like one of those classic ACL injuries, you know, he hasn't played forever. I feel like people forget just how good Karl-Anthony Towns is. Don't you?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I just feel like people, like, I don't know, people are talking again about Jokic and Embiid and stuff, and I just feel like people forget like how bleeping good Karl-Anthony Towns is. So to your question, like, offensively, he's already maybe like the best big man shooter ever. But his defense has obviously been atrocious. Everyone has known that.
And he's one of those players where he's always, you know, got flack for the stuff he can't do rather than the stuff he can do. And when I asked about his defense, that's with, you know, the caveat that he is, for me, the best offensive center in the league.
Yep.
I think he's better than Jokic, although I do love Jokic, but I think that until I want him to get better on defense because I want this team to win. But just as much, I just want him to dig his way out of this narrative that surrounds him, because he's such an awesome player. He's such an awesome guy. I mean, you know, the stuff he does, but, you know, behind the scenes, I mean, I know he can be a bit corny sometimes with interviews, but he's been a consummate professional for this team, and I really want him to become a better defender. So I guess that's why I asked these questions.
No, that's a great question. And, you know, so you had said this, the same thing can go for D'Angelo Russell. I'm more of like an eye test guy, whereas like you and Dane and Jack and all those guys have far more understanding of the numbers. But like, when you watch Karl-Anthony Towns play, he's not soft. Like, he is a physical dude. Like, that dude takes a beating. So I think the reason with his defensive lapses or just his inability to defend, it's just extra frustrating, because I think like physically he can do it. Like, physically it's there. I really think, and this is based off of really nothing other than my eyes, I really think it's just all mostly in his head. It's kind of like, again, I like to make all the non-basketball analogies, but like, it's like you said about how the things he says in the press or the things he does, like, he always has good intentions, but he's just sometimes saying things because he thinks he should be saying them. And I think sometimes on defense, he's like, he's reaching because he thinks he should reach, or he's jumping when he thinks, he just, he's just not mentally all there. But so I think he can be an average or better defender. And if he's that, just an average, you know, whatever, 50th percentile defender with what he brings on offense, I mean, dude, that guy is a top 10 player in the league because of what you just said from his from his offensive skill. D'Angelo Russell, I don't know. Because again, when I just said all that stuff about Carl being physical and, you know, taking a beating and not being afraid of physicality, I don't see that with D'Angelo Russell. D'Angelo Russell is a good dude, has athleticism, obviously, for being an NBA point guard, but he's all finesse. He's all, you know, he doesn't get to the line a lot. He doesn't go to the rim a lot. He's very much a finesse player. So I think to be a good defender, and you should please correct me if I'm wrong, Blake, to be a good defender, you got to be physical. Like, can you name a defender in the league that's like a top five, top 10 guy who's quote unquote a finesse defender? Like, you just, the Beverleys, Kawhis, Paul George's of the world, you got to be able to take a beating. Like, playing defense is hard. You got to be in a guy's body. So I don't know. I don't really have high hopes for D'Angelo Russell defensively. I just kind of think he's going to be their liability a lot, and they're going to have to find ways to just constantly have two or three extra guys out there that can just, they can continue to hide D'Angelo Russell, who again is special offensively, not nearly what Towns is for his position, but I think Towns can do it. I really do. I think he can do it. I think hopefully they adjust their defensive style under Vanderpool to, you know, kind of cater to Towns' strengths more. But for D'Angelo Russell, I don't know. I like him. I'm glad they have him over Wiggins, but I'm with you. Like, I don't see it. Do you?
No, I don't see it. I think it's like, I completely agree with what you said. I think Towns is more in between the ears rather than actual effort. I don't think that Towns, you know, is out there not trying. I think he's more out there, I guess, trying too much at times, Towns.
Exactly.
I think he wants to be a great defender, where I think Russell Moore doesn't really mind because he knows he can get his on the other end. I don't think Towns has that mentality. I just think that, yeah, I think he tries too much. I think he wants to be great. He when he's left on, you know, in an island in his own head to try and, you know, quarterback a defense, I think it all gets a little bit too much for him. And for that reason, I think that is a little bit more teachable than effort. I think once he, you know, I think every year, even last year when, you know, this season when he's got, I think, I guess, more criticism than ever, I think he still got a little bit better defensively, especially when he was healthy, very healthy, I guess, at the start of the season. I just think that if he can get to, yeah, that between that 30th and 50th percentile, I think that's enough as a big, and Russell probably the same. Russell, I think, has almost as good a tools. Not like you said, he's not very physical, but I think he's long. He really should be a better defender in the pick and roll. But from what I've seen, you know, I've gone over and watched those 14 games that the Minnesota played after the deadline more than once for all those games, and he just zones out so often. I don't think Towns ever zones out. I think Towns kind of just gets lost, whereas Russell, you know, he'll be playing, even when he's off the ball, you know, getting hidden, he'll tag the roller, and then he'll just forget about his man behind him, and all of a sudden, you know, someone's back cut for an easy two, or he'll, you know, just fall asleep completely off the ball, and I think that's a pretty, you know, big indictment on Russell. I think he needs to be a better defender. He just needs to be more aware in pretty much every situation. So I'm not sure whether he'll ever be, you know, in the 50th percentile. But like you said, I think the main thing is they need to put defenders around those two. That's the biggest. I don't think they need to be world beaters defensively. I think we would love it if they were. We would love it if they were really consistent defenders, but all the signs point to players never going from bad to really good. So if you can get them guys to just below average and then put you know, above average and great defenders around them, that's how you win.
Yeah, and you know, I think it's obvious, like, we should state the criticism of Karl-Anthony Towns' defense is valid. Like, he's not a good defender, and all the numbers back it up. So I think you might scoff, or a listener might scoff, when we say that Carl should try less on defense. And that's, you know, it's not exactly what I mean verbatim, but it's just, you know, I when I watch him, I don't see, and I could be wrong, but I don't see the, like you said, taking constant plays off, or I don't see the lapses in effort. I just think he's trying too many things, or he's trying to, like, I don't know. I've watched some plays where it's like Carl's trying to be the all five defenders. And it's like, dude, just stick in your area, you know, like whether it's a drop scheme, whatever, just like stick to your role and worry about your stuff. And I don't know if that comes on to the Timberwolves have, since Jimmy's gone, they haven't really had good defenders. I mean, Josh obviously can defend Josh Kogi, but sometimes you think maybe Towns is just, he's still young. Like maybe he's trying to be like, well, I'm going to do everyone's job. It's like, no, dude, just do your job. Like if you just do your job, and you really focus at it, and you keep, you know, keep your feet down, and you're not jumping in all these pump fakes, and you're not reaching all the time. Like you said, if he can even get to the 30th percentile, like that would be, I think people don't realize how much that would benefit this team if he was just, you know, a quarter better. Like just those little improvements would be so good, and they're going to need it because, like I said, this team is built with those two cornerstones. I mean, it's Russell and Towns for as long as we can pretty much look forward to. So one of them is going to have to be competent on defense, or this isn't going to work. And I think that's what Rosas is betting on.
Yeah, exactly. I completely agree. And I think as much as we all want to see this team, you know, be a top 10 defense and reach their potential, you know, the highest qualities, I don't think they're ever going to be like that. I think Houston is obviously the comparison they get a lot, but I think they, what you want to be more like Dallas of this season. I mean, Dallas had the best offensive rating of all time this season, and I don't expect Minnesota to hit those lofty heights, but, you know, they were ranked 17th in defensive rating. They were below average for pretty much the entire season on defense, but just enough to make sure that their defense, sorry, that their offense could survive with that below average defense. That's the outlook I think Minnesota should be going for. It's that Dallas-esque, you know, kind of look where you have the two stars. I mean, Luka's obviously a freak of nature, but I think Towns can be, you know, right up there with Luka in terms of offensive talent. And obviously, he's not got the ball in his hands all the time, but he can definitely impact the game offensively the same way that Luka can. And then you can, you know, pick and choose between Porzingis and Russell. Obviously, they're all different positions, and that's a weird kind of example, but first in offensive rating or top five in offensive rating and kind of, you know, late teens, early 20s in defensive rating, that's where I think Minnesota want to be at the moment. That's I think they can do that with this team, and then, you know, to win a championship, one of them guys are going to have to go above, well above what we think they can defensively. But I think at least for the time being, you can get to, you know, a perennial playoff contender. I think Dallas are a very good team and the type of team who could easily, you know, sneak a series off one of the best teams in the league if everything goes for them. So that's what I'm looking for. And what they do is they have good defenders around their stars, you know, the Dorian Finney-Smith, you know, Tim Hardaway's improved defensively, to Dwight Powell, Maxi Kleber, like they're all really good defenders and cover the holes of Luka. And Paul Zingas is a good defender, but he's still, you know, susceptible to chasing blocks and to kind of not being in the right position. So it's a hard one, but I think, yeah, you want to get them to at least average, you know, 50th percentile, and then maybe you can see what you got from there.
That Mavs comp is so good because, like you said, it's apples and steak in terms of comparisons with, I mean, Russell and Luka are completely different players, and Towns and Porzingis are pretty different players, but it's that same concept of, you know, that 1-5, and then I mean, I don't know, Tim Hardaway's nice. He does some things that Malik Beasley does, but I mean, they don't have a third guy on that roster. It's a lot of guys that stick to roles and play defense and can hit a shot, and I think that's what Rosas is building right now. I don't think it's the Houston model as much, but that's a good question. What was your next one?
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
So for the next one, I had this one I'm pretty intrigued to hear your answer. So how bad does the start of the season have to be or you know, for the entire season have to be for Ryan Saunders' seat to start getting really hot? Assuming management stays the same and that Rosas is still the guy, you know, who's leading the charge. How bad does it have to get before we talk about Ryan Saunders actually getting fired? You know, I know a lot of people called for it last season. I'm not a big Ryan Saunders endorser, but I don't think he should be fired just yet. But how bad do they have to be for that to happen?
So I know I just said that I think Glenn will sell the team by the time the next season starts, but I'm with you. Let's just simulate this out, that ownership is not a factor and this is all front office and roster and success based. I don't think they can have another season like they had.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to work under Glenn, under Kevin Garnett, under me, under you. Like, I don't think they can do that again. So if the season starts again in Christmas and everyone is playing normal NBA 82 game schedule, I mean, I don't know, dude. Like, if they're 5-12 or something, I don't think it's a guarantee that if things start off super south, which I don't think they will, but if they don't start, I mean, if they start off bad, I don't think 20 games is a bad. I don't think you're going to be able to sell to a broken fan base another year of being terrible. You know, granted that, you know, in the Wiggins trade, they gave up that pick and it's top three protected. So, I mean, there's still a little cushion in 2021 that if they're, you know, 15 and whatever, 67 or whatever, that they could probably still get a pick. But you're not going to be able to sell that to the fan base and be like, hey, don't worry, we got another pick coming. They have to start winning some games.
And you're not going to be able to sell that to, you know, Glenn Taylor or, you know, insert new owner here with Rosas.
Exactly.
I mean, he is, especially if management changes and if the front office, the owner changes and they do give him that one more chance, that he's not going to sit on his hands and let, you know, bad coaching be the reason that he gets fired after two seasons.
And I like Ryan more than maybe you or the average person likes Ryan, but I've got to talk to him a couple times. He's a really good guy.
Yeah.
I'm not like Ryan needs to go, but I'm also not a proponent of Ryan needs the key to the city. Like, yeah. if it doesn't work soon, he's got to go. And I think, and I do, I really do think Gerson Rosas is like a really smart guy. I think that was always the plan, is like, listen, Ryan, you took over the interim. We're going to let you come on. And we're going to give you a salary bump or whatever, and you're going to run a team as the youngest coach in the league. But if things go south, you will be the scapegoat.
Yeah.
So if we're 5-12 by the early, you know, end of January, if the season starts on Christmas, you're going to be the one that takes the blame. We're going to give, you know, David Vanderpool or someone else, Pablo Prigioni, the job. That's just how this is going to work out. And again, I just don't think they can start slow. I mean, I don't think they have to start fast and be 12-4. But if they're 25, 30 games in the season and they're not at least 500, I think that's a disaster, because then you're going to see it. Like, you're going to see, it doesn't matter that Towns and Russell are best friends and on the same team, they're still going to have rumors about which guys want out. Do they both want out? So yeah, I think they got to start fast. They're going to be well rested. that's for sure.
Yeah. In terms of Kat, I know you don't want to upset Towns, but I think he'll definitely, you know, be more understanding if they're sitting at the bottom of the pack again. Like, I had around 40 games, so I said, you know, if they're 10-30, I mean, I know I think we all know that, that Rosas really likes having Saunders there as kind of, I guess, you know, this is harsh on Ryan, and it's not what I mean the way it's going to come out, but as his kind of puppet that he can, you know, get to implement the system that he wants to win with, like we spoke about before. Rosas wants to play that small ball, you know, Houston North type style. He believes that is, you know, what can win championships, and I think he doesn't want a guy who comes in and, you know, he's an older coach or a guy who's been around the league for a long time whose stubbornness and system needs to be implemented straight away. I think Rosas would probably clash heads with a guy who's not willing to, you know, implement that system and really go all in on it, because we've seen that they want to win that way. They want to shoot a ton of threes. They want to play fast, play small, you know, obviously outside of Towns. But yeah, I think that earns him a little bit of leeway. I don't think there's any obligation by Glenn Taylor that Saunders needs to be the coach. I think if Rosas thinks he should go, he'll go. But I think he gets a little bit of leeway just because he's the kind of coach that Gersan can mold into his system. But that leeway doesn't last that long if you're absolutely terrible and if there's new owners and Rosas seats hot as well. So, I don't know. It's a tough one, but yeah, I agree with you. I don't think they can be a bottom three team in the West again, or at least, you know, they need to be close to 500. They can't be terrible again.
And you know, one thing to add on before we get into your next one, because I agree with you, but when you said, you know, you don't want to piss off Karl Anthony Towns, I agree. I love Towns, probably my favorite player. But
you want to win.
I also think at some point, like, and again, Karl has been through more in the last 6 months than I've been in probably my life, but like, at some point, it's okay to be, like, uncomfortable. You know, like, I don't, there's a, Tom Thibodeau is one end of the spectrum, and Ryan Saunders is like the complete opposite.
Yeah, they need to find some standpoint. Middle ground there.
But there's like a Kenny Atkinson in there. Yeah. There's a, there's like, you know, I know Ryan gets a lot of free reign and a big leash because he's a young coach, but like that Taylor Jenkins in Memphis is also a pretty young coach, and like he's I don't think he's gonna win coach of the year, but like that he's really good.
Yeah.
And he also won with young players in a rebuilding franchise. So I don't think there's this whole thing, well, if we get rid of Ryan, are we gonna piss off Carl? Like there's a lot of good coaches in the NBA, a lot of good assistant coaches.
And if they bring in someone and they, you know, finish the season with, you know, 20 wins and 10 losses, Karl Anthony Towns will be happy. If they fire Saunders and the next season they make the playoffs, Towns will be happy. I can guarantee that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't think Tom Thibodeau could coach that team, but pretty much anyone else, like if they're winning games, I mean, having a good relationship with your head coach isn't going to get Carl's name out of the gutter in terms of the national perspective.
Yes.
Like, winning games is the only way. I mean, Karl Anthony Towns has been a world-class role model this summer with how he's handled everything. But at the end of the day, when basketball picks up again and we're going every night this Christmas, this January, if he keeps losing games, he's going to be back in the gutter.
Yeah.
Like empty stat guys are not looked at well in the NBA or on Twitter or in the general landscape. So he's going to have to win. So who can help Carl win? Maybe it's Ryan, maybe it's not, but I don't think he's going to have a long leash if things start bad.
Yeah, I completely agree. So third question. I'm writing about this at the moment, so Dana, I'm really intrigued to see what you think about this, but how much, you know, if any, do you expect Malik Beasley's shooting to regress, assuming he's back, which all reports, you know, point towards him coming back unless he's offered some sort of godfather free agency deal, but if we assume he's back, how much do you think he'll regress, if any, as a shooter?
I'm such a bad person to ask for this because, again, so optimistic. Like, when you had sent me that question before this, I, like, looked it up. I was like, man, like, his – if you're listening to this and you have 5 seconds, just go look at his stats when he came over from Denver. Like, his shooting numbers –
I've got some of them here as well. So, I'll go through them quickly. So, he shot 42.6% on 8.2 threes a game. The only other player to hit that many threes at a high percentage was Duncan Robinson, who has – a genuine case to be the best shooter not named Steph Curry in the league at the moment. He shot 48.6% on 2.6 pull-up threes a game. For reference, the only, only of every player who's ever attempted 2.5 pull-ups a game, well, since 2013-14 when they started tracking the data, only Steph Curry has ever hit over 43%. So he shot 5% better than Steph Curry's best season. That was 2015-16 when Steph Curry was like, you know, the human torch. So it's, I think, yeah, like, to answer that for myself, I think he's definitely due regression. I mean, he has to be because they're ungodly numbers. Like, and it just felt like every shot he hit, even like when I look at it, 42.6% felt low. That because just from watching those last, you know, 14, 15 games, I just felt like Malik Beasley hit every shot that he took. And
yeah, I mean, and he was, and again, maybe devil's advocate is that after the Wolves passed on Steph Curry, maybe they're finally getting the karma they deserve to get the next one. But no, I'm with you. I mean, because I went and rewatched. I mean, I have nothing else to do right now. There's before the NBA and WNBA came back, there was nothing on TV.
Yeah.
But yeah, I went and watched just some games, just like with the new Wolves. And again, eye test over analytics. But like, yeah, man, he hit some just crazy shots.
Yeah.
Like, he just hit.
They weren't catch and shoot open threes. Like, they were pull-ups. No, they were off the dribble, pick and roll threes. Like, everything, he was just splashing.
He hit some in the flow of the offense, but he also just hit some when, like, broken down plays. So it goes back to, like, when I said there's a difference between Tom Thibodeau and Ryan Saunders somewhere in the middle. I mean, Malik Beasley was essentially getting DNPs in Denver. Yeah. And Denver is an elite franchise. I think in terms of player development and all that stuff. So like, did he just not get a chance? Maybe he didn't. Maybe they're so deep and they just didn't have room for him. So he comes into Minnesota and he's playing for a contract. He's playing for opportunity. He's pissed off. Did that help it? Yeah, probably. I mean, there is no way, because what you just said, and I know you're going to write about this, there's no way they'll get that Malik Beasley for the duration of his contract.
Yeah.
Like, it's literally impossible. But
that doesn't mean he's going to become, you know, this below average shooter all of a sudden. I mean, like, if he hits 38% on six threes a night, you know, and probably more catch and shoot stuff with Towns, you know, taking, the bulk of the offensive possessions away from him, that's still really high level. Like, that's Jason Tatum, Chris Middleton, you know, type level shooter. And that's very, very helpful.
Yeah. So again, I think I kind of just continue to railroad all your questions and just jump around. But like, I, it's going to regress.
Yeah.
If you are listening to this and you like Malik Beasley, if you are Malik Beasley listening to this, your shooting is going to regress. But I think it can still be higher. Like, you know, it can come down from that peak, but it can still hit a level that's pretty much higher than we've ever seen from like a guard for the Wolves since, I don't even know when. Like, yeah. Who's the last guard that shot that well? And I think if you can get him at the right deal, and I think you kind of have some ideas in your head better than I do about what a possible deal looks like. But if you can convince him to say, hey, we're going to not be able to give you the world. I don't know. It's 448 reasonable.
Yeah, that's my optimum deal is 448. I mean, he turned down 3 years, 30 from Denver. Last year after the season, which is obviously only, you know, $2 million less annually, but that extra year, you know, obviously works out to $18 million extra. We're in the middle of a pandemic. Teams are not going to be, you know, clamoring for Malik Beasley, even though he was really good, but no team's giving him $20 million because they saw him play 14 good games in Minnesota when, you know, there's, you know, bare cupboards in terms of cap space. And Minnesota clearly, you know, even for his perspective, I just feel like Minnesota, if he wants to be that player, I don't see why going to another system, you know, is the right idea. Another system for $2 million extra a year is better than just signing the 4 years, 48, and then maybe you turn to a star and you're 27 when that contract runs out and then you sign that bigger deal.
And I think that's why, and I would imagine that Gerson was on top of this more than little blog boy Kyle, but like, I would imagine that not only are they going to sell him on, hey, we're going to give you a life-changing amount of money, but we all, like, they're going to sell him on fit and family, which again, is kind of what the Wolves have to do because they're not on one of the coasts, you know, they're not on a beach. But yeah, like 448, let's say, like, are you really going to turn that down for $4.56 to go play in Atlanta when, I don't know, like I respect and like Trae Young, but like, do you want to go play with that? Because that could get really bad really quick. Like, that could just be not fun to play with.
Yeah.
After a while, you know what I mean? Like, there's him and Herter and like some other guys on that team. Like, I don't know. I think they're going to say, look at what this position we had for you. You're going to take the starting two guard. You had some good chemistry with Russell. That's going to have to be part of it, because if it gets, and you and I like talked about this before, but if it gets north of 460,
I'm out on that. And I think surely they are too. They have to know, like you said, they know, the front office knows way more about the ins and outs of their cap sheet and what they need to do to become a good team, but more than we do. But they can't think that tying up, you know, every cent in Karl-Anthony Towns, D'Angelo Russell, and Malik Beasley is the way to win a championship.
And to their credit, the front office, like, I'm going to go to bed tonight on Saturday thinking Malik Beasley is going to be signing a long-term deal here, and I'm going to wake up tomorrow thinking the same thing. Yeah. But if it doesn't happen, and again, last time I say it, but the Kool-Aid, like, if it doesn't happen, I will believe that it was the right decision. Yeah. And color me way too optimistic, but, like, we don't have to dive into it again. But the whole Tyus Jones thing, that just they got Jordan McLaughlin for essentially free. I trust them. Like, we love Beasley because he came in and lit the world on fire and is a cool dude with a cute son. But, like, you don't give that guy 4 years, $64 million. Like, you can't do that. Otherwise, you never have a chance to win. Yeah. Because they have already put all of their finances into two dudes. So they're going to have to, if Malik Beasley signs, he's probably going to be the third highest paid player on essentially their contending team. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to have another guy making more money than him.
No. So you have
long term.
Yeah, and you're going to have to build around the fringes. And if you save that $18 million between the 48 and the 64, I think I got my maths wrong there. But you know, that's money that you can go and spend. You know, that's the first round draft pick that you sign for $8 million a season. That's the one tier up, you know, free agent that you can now get because you didn't spend that money on Malik Beasley. You know, it's just money. It's money that you're not in the luxury tax when you're trying to build, you know, a contender. So I don't think they would give him heaps. I think that's kind of the reason I asked that question, is because for us as fans, I think we need, and obviously the front office would already know this, but we need to temper our expectations, I guess, with Beasley, just because that's not the player he is. And that's not to say he's not a good player, because I do think he is, but the way he shot in those 14 games were unfathomably good. Like, that won't happen for a full season, and if it does, he's the best shooter in the NBA by a long way. So,
and my only caveat to that, because I obviously fully agree with you, is that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but he played one game with Karl-Anthony Towns, right?
Yeah.
The Toronto game, I mean, the infamous Toronto game, where that's what the Wolves were going to look like until everything kind of fell apart. But again, you and I have rewatched the games. He hit kind of unconsciousable heat check type shots because he had to, also.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of times the other threats on the floor were Josh Okogie, Jarrett Culver, Naz Reid. I don't think he can ever shoot like that again, but it's also going to open up a lot more for him to just shoot normal practice, like, three-pointers if Karl-Anthony Towns is on the floor.
And I think he's definitely the kind of guy who, like, he's definitely a confidence player. And I think he'll have 8-game stretches where he hits, you know, half of his threes on 8 threes a night because he's just in the zone. But, you know, 14 games seems like a decent sample size when you're watching them every, you know, two nights, and it's, you know, one and a half months of basketball. You're like, wow, Malik Beasley's been doing this for so long. But to do that for 82 games is just not going to happen. But like you said, he's going to get way better looks with Towns in the offense. I mean, how many times did we see Towns get doubled in the post this year and swing a pass to Jokic Okogie in the corner who bricked it, or to Jarrett Culver in the corner who bricked it? Like, if that's Malik Beasley, first of all, you can't even double off Malik Beasley, so that's more buckets for Towns in the post. But if you do, if you're picking your poison and your poison is leave Beasley open, he's going to hit that three. And that probably puts him up around 40% and an extremely good shooter. I think, you know, yeah, extremely good shooter. I just think, yeah, that the confidence is so important to him. I think he needs to start the season off strong. If he starts the season in a shooting slump, that might get ugly pretty quick. I don't think he'll ever be a bad shooter, but, you know, he might be a 35% shooter. But if he starts off hot, you know, and he realizes that he can hit shots in this system, then I think he could be, you know, 40% on 5 or 6 threes a game, which is elite level.
Yeah, and I'll just kind of close on this for this question, but, like, if I had, like, if this was dating and I had a type, my type of NBA player would be just gamers.
Yeah.
And I think that's why everyone fell in love with Malik.
Yeah.
I mean, he put his arms up to raise the Target Center crowd more times in his short stint here than, like, Andrew Wiggins did in his whole tenure.
Yeah, well, you know, well, like, that's the dude one, was on that would the be ground. One time.
yeah, exactly. It was probably on draft day, but, like, I really think that he's a gamer. And again, that you don't just pay guys that you like all the money in the world. You got to find that reasonable thing. But I think he's the type of player that you see on winning teams.
Yeah.
So the price matters. But again, I think that guy has heart and that guy has things that bring the best out of guys like Russell, who also is a gamer, who also is an emotional dude, and Towns, who tries to keep his emotions in check, does a terrible job of doing it. But I think that's the type of guy you want around that organization and on the floor, but the price has to be right, so we'll see.
Yeah, exactly. So that's probably the biggest, you know, talking point, I guess, in Minnesota circles at the moment, just is that Beasley contract. So I thought we'd touch on that. For the fourth question, do you think it's tenable, I guess, to have Josh Okogie and Jared Culver on the same roster, and then if so, on the court together for long periods of time?
So I like both. I'm like an uncomfortably just massive Josh Okogie fan, because I just think at his price and what he does and his, again, my type. I love gamers. Like, Josh is never going to be the guy. If it was the 13th night of a back to back to back to back, like, he's still going to give you his heart.
Yeah.
So I love that. And it's probably important to say that, like, next year Josh Okogie is going to make $2.7 million.
Yeah.
Shout out to, I mean, that was one of the few good draft picks in kind of Wolves lore going back. Jarrett Culver, I also like. Like, if someone was just in general selling Jarrett Culver stock, I'd be buying it, because I think you can get his issues solved pretty much in his head. I mean, I know his jump shot is abysmal to look at, but I think you can fix it. So I like Jarrett Culver. But to answer your question, I don't think you can. I was shocked. I forgot how much Jarrett Culver's rookie contract was. So I think next year he's making 6.1, and then it's 6.38, and then his qualifying offer of 10.
Yeah.
He has to be a lot. Like, you can be Josh Okogie and make $2 million and be a big asset, but if you're making $8 million and you're Jarrett Culver, like, you got to be doing a lot more to make that value. So no, like, and Dane talks about this all the time, but, like, I don't think those guys are both in their in Rosas's long-term plans. I still support the Jarrett Culver move. I don't love Dario Saric. I don't even know if he'll play here in the NBA next year. But I like the risk. They spent nothing to try to take a risk, and Jarrett Culver hasn't panned out, and he might. But I don't. I see Josh Okogie having a longer tenure with the Wolves and being more of a sticking point than Jarrett Culver. I don't know what you think. I guess this is, I'm really excited for you to answer this one, but I don't think Jarrett Culver is long for this team.
Yeah, I do agree. I think, obviously, if one of them, you know, develop a reliable 3-point shot, this you know, conversation changes a bit, because if Jarrett Culver comes out next season and shoots 37% from three, which I'd be very surprised if that happened.
Jeez, but, like, how cool would that be?
But then you know, you can envision them playing together, because that's the big, you know, stumbling block for those two. So they both can't shoot, and this system is so heavily reliant on launching threes and being able to space the floor effectively around Towns and around Russell and even around Beasley. So I think you got to pick your poison in a way. I think Okogie's clearly a better, you know, point of attack defender. Like you said, just huge energy guy. The kind of guy who gets the crowd on their feet. He makes defensive plays. he'll never ever stop trying. Not that Jared Culver, I don't think, is a low energy guy, but Cody's one of them guys that teams only have one of them, if any. And that's that guy that you know, is just nonstop. Like there's a reason they call him nonstop, and that's because he's just a little energizer bunny on the court, and maybe his skills don't always keep up with that same level, but that energy gets you a long way, especially on the defensive end, especially, you know, attacking driving lanes and dunking on dudes. Like, I love Okogie too, irrationally. I think I agree with you. I think I'd probably, if I had to sell one of them, it'd probably be Culver, just because if you're going to have, you know, two non-shooters, I think you want the guy who has a chance to be a genuinely elite defender rather than the guy who has a chance to be a good defender and does a little bit more offensively, just because this team needs elite defenders. And I don't know if Culver will ever be an elite defender. Well, I do think he'll be a good one, but not sure he'll ever get to the levels that Okogie could. But yeah, it's tough for me. I don't think they can survive. I think if I had the option, I'd probably look to trade Culver, just because he still have value around the league. Like, sixth pick in their second year still nets you something. You know, if that's Aaron Gordon, if it's, you know, a throw in to try and get a star, Culver's the one guy who you can guarantee is going out.
Yeah, and I think that's all. I think I agree with all that. I think just a couple months ago, I got to give him a shout out. I think his name is like @YoLeo on Twitter, yeah. But he put together like a compilation of Jared Culver's best defensive highlights from the season. He pretty much watched like every minute of Jared Culver's tape. And you forget how good Jared was sometimes, yeah. Like on defense. Like, you forget how, like,
because we were so down on him offensively, I think it was easy to overlook what he was actually doing right.
Yeah, I think if he just had the most basic, generic rookie like splits for a shooter, like nothing pretty, just average, I think we'd be a lot higher on him. I think we just always think of those free throw mechanics and some of those flat jump shots. But I remember when that video came out, again, you can find it on Twitter. He is so long. Like, for everything that Josh Okogie brings, he doesn't, I don't think, I'd have to look these measurements up again. He just doesn't seem to have Jarrett's length. Like, Jared is just a long guy that can just disrupt so many passing lanes, can cover on the help side and block some shots. So again, I'm not out on him, but to answer your question, like, I don't think they'll both be here in 2 years. But again, too, like, the Jared Culver thing that sucks and I feel for him, we're going to go the way the NBA world works and how they kind of screwed Jared Culver over for Summer League last year when they wouldn't announce the trade, you know, all that stuff. So he didn't get to play in Summer League, and then he had kind of a weird rookie start. And now this year, if there would have been Summer League this year, Jared Culver would have been playing in Summer League. Like, that's not a hot take. Like, he would have been in Vegas. So he's going to go 2 years without, like, developmental reps, and I think that hurts him, because I think he could have worked out some of those mental kinks. I mean, he had the weirdest rookie season ever for a kid moving from small-town Texas to Minneapolis. Like,
and I truly do believe he could be a good player. I think I've said before, but he's the kind of guy who I could see people saying, like, why did Minnesota trade him? You know, and I understand why they would trade him. I just said I understand. I probably would do it over Okogie, but it just, I don't know. I'm so torn on Culver, just because I can see him becoming a good player. I have no issue with him staying on the roster. I just think this team needs something that's not a developing Jared Culver who might not ever develop to be good, you know, and just because he still has that value. I mean, if you package Culver and the 16th pick in this year's draft, I think you net something fairly decent. And and that's the only reason, I guess, maybe that lowers my perception on him, just because I think, like, I kind of want him traded because I want more win now or win in the next, you know, 1 to 2 years kind of pieces. But I can't. Everything I read about him and every coach he's ever had has said he's the hardest worker in the gym and always has been. And maybe that's, you know, the mentality that he needs after a rookie season like he has just had to kind of come back. I won't be surprised if he comes back next season and he's actually good. Like, not great, but, you know, fourth best player on the team. Like, that wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, and again, the case against Jared Culver is that you and I watched him play.
Yeah.
And he has one of the worst jump shots I've ever seen. And And again, the Wolves, and this is probably, I think, written about somewhere, but like the Wolves weren't waiting for Jarrett Culver to finish his rookie season before they fixed his jump shot. I got to attend a couple of games and cover some games. Like every night, they were working on his mechanics. Yeah. So like they started changing his jump shot in October or September. But the case for him, again, like you said, is that if Jarrett Culver's that piece in the Aaron Gordon trade that we've talked about before, Jarrett Culver didn't have summer league number one. He didn't have summer league number two. He basically had to hide from Minnesota for 3 months because they couldn't really announce the trade and do all that stuff.
He never got that spoon feeding, you know, he never got 35 minutes a game. Like even at when he, you know, in the few stretches that he did play well for Minnesota, he was still getting like, you know, 15 to 25 minutes a night. Like Ryan Saunders definitely didn't baby him, you know, and let him have whatever he wanted. Like he had to work for everything he got. And that's tough after you come from being a star, you know, on a team that just made the Final Four. And like you said, you're from a small town, all of a sudden you're in the NBA and you can't crack 20 minutes a night and your jump shot won't fall and they're tinkering with it every night and your free throw looks like a car crash and it didn't last season, and it didn't last season, you know? And like, I can see how it would have been overwhelming for him, and he still does strike me as the player who's going to, you know, figure it all out once all of that becomes a bit more, you know, everyday routine rather than just overwhelming.
Yeah, and he was a wing player at Texas Tech who handled the ball a lot, but then he came in, and I remember, like, the first press conferences, they're talking about him playing point guard.
Yeah.
So then he comes in and starts playing another position, and he's a rookie, which I would say it's safe to say that playing point guard as a rookie is the hardest thing to do because of the talent of that position. But then D'Angelo Russell comes in 40-some games in, so, like, then he's already not the point guard of the future and stuff. But yeah, I believe in my heart of hearts that if Jarrett Culver gets drafted by the Charlotte Hornets and just – they throw him out there at the two, and they're playing him 35 minutes a night again alongside Devontae Graham. He might have won Rookie of the Year. Like, you know what I mean? Just like if he would have just been free flowing, can do more of what he wants, take mid range jumpers when he's comfortable with it. I mean, with how bad the rookie class was, like he might have won Rookie of the Year. I mean, I know Ja was really good and Zion had his stuff, but I would hate to see him be in that Aaron Gordon trade. Like you said, go to Orlando, have open court, and just kick ass. Like that would be the worst.
Yeah, I'm completely on the fence about Culver. I mean, it's one of them ones where if he got traded, I don't think I'd be like, you know, super upset about it. But then if he didn't, I'd be really excited to see him next season. So, it's kind of, I could go either way on that. But we'll jump into the last question. This one I've talked about before. I did a whole podcast with Jack Borman about this, but I'd love to know your thoughts. So I won't stay too long on it, but do you think there's a role in this team for Juancho Hernangómez?
Yes. I mean, I think that the simple, educated answer is there's a role for him. I liked what he did. He was kind of an to me, he reminded me of like a less playmaking Nemanja Bjelica.
Yeah.
But who kind of gave a damn.
Yeah.
like I think Juancho showed up to the arena at night, be like, cool, I want to play basketball. Whereas like Belly, I don't know if that was always the case. I mean, again, like, I don't know if he's fully loves the NBA style, the game, whatever, the politics of it all. But so I think having guys like that matters. Like Juancho came in, I think you can play him he's not a starting player in the league, but I mean, you can play him as a nice backup, and you know, maybe every sixth night he just is a DNP and he's making a couple million. But that's like it, though. I mean, I think you have a role for him. But I know people like to say, well, the Wolves flipped a pick for Juancho and Beasley and Vanderbilt. But that doesn't mean I feel attached to Juancho Hernangómez. Yeah. Like if he comes calling for $5 or $6 million, I think that's way more than I'm willing to pay him.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that was what I had down, and that's what I've said before, is if he's in a bench role, you know, a low-minute role, and his contract reflects that, then I don't have a problem with it, but that's definitely the extent of it to me. I mean, he was a really great shooter, you know, in his time with Minnesota, but again, pretty, you know, unsustainable numbers. I mean, he's never been that good throughout his career. I still think he's a better shooter than the 29% or whatever he shot in Denver in a role where he couldn't kind of get off the bench, and when he did, he was just asked to shoot open threes and never really get involved in the offense. But I don't know, I don't think he does anything that well outside of shoot the ball. Like, he's really good on them slips out of the pick and roll, but he shot 47% on cuts, which is in the 19th percentile. I mean, he was pretty horrible finishing around the rim in Minnesota and has been for his whole career. He can't defend the four or the five. He doesn't block shots. You know, he's not good positioning-wise or, you know, as a team defender. So, I don't know. I think there's a role for him on the team, but I think that role could probably be filled by someone who complements, you know, Towns and Russell a bit more. But if one shows up on the team at 3 years, $9 million, I don't think anyone could really complain about that.
No, I hope he's on the team because, again, I think you hit the nail on the head. Like, he didn't really do anything well. Like, he did some nice things, but he didn't, like, excel in one area. But I also think it's kind of weird, like, when I was just looking at Basketball Reference and you're just kind of Googling a guy's stats, but, like, he never played more than, I think, like, 14 and a half minutes a game.
He looked really happy to be, you know, able to strut his stuff on the court and really show what he can do. And maybe that's the new normal for him. Like, maybe that's all he needed. But I just don't think that – I don't think he's good enough defensively where you can – that can be tenable, that he gets to strut his stuff offensively and, you know, be a bad defender. Like, not on this team.
Yeah. I agree. Like I said, he's averaging 14 and a half minutes in Denver, and then he came in and in 14 games averaged 30 for the Wolves. Like, if Juancho Hernan Gomez is playing 30 minutes for any franchise, that team sucks.
Yeah.
So again, you can't do that, but if you can get him, like you said, three years for $9 million is a good deal. Bring him off the bench as, I don't know what, seventh, eighth man. He can do some things, but I think the world has shown, like, you can't have just a complete matador at that position. And you really can't pay those fringe guys high money if they don't do one specific thing well. You know, like, if maybe you're just a defender, but you help the other guys. But Juancho, I mean, you can find those guys around the league.
Yeah, like, everyone, not everyone, but, like, players shoot well everywhere now. You know what I mean? Like, you can find 37% shooters that can play small ball for in every corner of the league and in the G League. And, you know, the way I kind of consider it with him is he better than Jake Layman? Because Jake Layman played 90% of his minutes at the four this season. So,
yeah, that's a good question.
And Layman's already on that contract. You know, he's on 3 years, $12 million. So, like, are you going to pay both of those dudes and have one of them sit on the bench? Or are you just going to give that role to a guy who, you know, is making the vet minimum? Like, because I think Layman's better. I think Juancho's a better shooter, but I think Layman is better in transition. He's a bit better defensive. I don't think Layman's great defensively, but he definitely is a smarter defender and, you know, more athletic, more capable of switching down a position and, you know, guarding fours and threes. So, I don't know. I think if it's to me, you're choosing out of one of them two and then you're giving the third string, you know, power forward minutes, if there's any, to Jared Vanderbilt. So, I like Juancho. I don't see the role for him really on this team unless, you know, there's trades and there probably will be. So maybe they bring him back because they know they're planning on something where Layman's the throw in or, you know, where, so who knows. But for me, I'm fairly out on Juancho.
And I think it's kind of like the Beasley thing again. Like, I think Minnesota fans are just, you know, destined to always worry about guys leaving them. But for him, I think Juancho needs Minnesota, you know, probably more than Minnesota needs him. Yeah. Like, I don't think, again, he's going to put up, you know, play 30 minutes a game or shoot 42% from three on five attempts. But I think you can sell him on a two years, $6 million. Just be like, listen, you're only 24. Play with us a couple more years, kind of, you know, develop in our system and then go get that one big contract where maybe you can go get four for 40. So I think for him, like, I don't know what the market is for a guy like that, but I think he'd be smart to stay here on a 1 or 2 year deal because I think, to kind of counter what you said, I do think there's enough of a role in this type of free-flowing system that he could make some money for himself. But I mean, I just don't see where – I don't think he's going to go sign with the Spurs for, you know, 3 for 15.
And the whole in my argument is that Layman can play multiple positions, so – like, in that scenario, you could play Layman and Juancho together in a second unit at the three and the four. I mean, He played 90% of his minutes at the four, Layman, but that doesn't mean he has to every year. So that's, I guess, the counter argument against myself.
Well, and I know we're kind of wrapping this up, but you said his name, so I get to bring it up. But I know this is like so nitty gritty, but man, I just want to see Jared Vanderbilt play basketball.
Oh, I love him.
I have no takes. I'm just saying, I think not having Summer League this year was an absolute disaster. Like, I know health and concerns and safety, and we talk about that second bubble, which I don't think is probably going to happen, but I know it was unsafe, but I would have loved to have seen him play. Him and Jared Culver, just let him play basketball a little bit and see, because I think Vanderbilt might be the guy when Wancho, if he does leave, you're like, man, but they got Jared Vanderbilt, and he's nice.
Yeah. And a lot of the national guys and the Denver guys are really high on Vanderbilt. So, like you said, we are wrapping it up. I don't want to get too far into Vanderbilt because I can speak about him for hours. But it's
let's do a 4-hour Jared Vanderbilt pod in September. We have nothing to talk about. So.
It's gonna get to that. I mean, if some good Timberwolves content doesn't come out soon, if they go and trade all of their picks in the draft for picks in the future and role players, Jared Vanderbilt's gonna get a 24-hour long live live charity event.
Yeah, if they just fall to the seventh pick and they end up drafting you and I are now well versed on all these draft guys, but they draft some kid from a small college, we're not gonna have anything to talk about. There's no intrigue, no trades, no fireworks. That's why, again, thanks, shout out to Glenn Taylor for trying to cash in,
because
he sparked us. Yep. He's just trying to build a brand before he sells it.
It's just helping out Canis Hoopers. So thanks for that, Glenn.
I appreciate you, man. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, man. Everyone else, rate, subscribe, comment, all that good stuff.
Yeah, do it.
As usual, Kyle, you're awesome to have on. Awesome chat. And I'll speak to all you guys next week.